I had thought maybe if there was any career situation for me, when I did take commercial art and I took a drafting class that year that I took a semester at Weaver, and I really enjoyed that, and I thought I might enjoy becoming an architect and explore that field. So that was the sort of in the back of my mind of the reason to go back to school and finish up. Of course, as the fact that I didn't have much college at that point, I would have just been going in and taking basic college courses to get my units and build up toward wherever I was going to go in it. And about the time that I had that just about all set up, we got a call from Modern Phil, who, as I say earlier, they had a motel in Ogden, and they had leased that motel to some people to run it for them, and they had gone to Las Vegas, Nevada, and leased a motel there. And they also had a motel up in West Yellowstone, Montana. So they would go up and run the one in West Yellowstone for about 5 months during the season, and then they would go back down to Las Vegas during the winter months. Well, it left them pretty hard for them to handle the one in Las Vegas while they were gone to West Yellowstone, so they hired me to come down, or they offered me a job to come down and manage the motel in Las Vegas. And it had living quarters, and it was a pretty nice unit. Las Vegas at that time was a fairly small town. It was only about 28,000, so it was a sort of a small town situation. And the offer was to furnish us with a place to live, all utilities paid, and they would pay us $400 a month. Well, we talked it over, and I said, well, you know, if I go back to school, I've got at least 4, maybe 5 years of schooling before I could get a degree or to be doing anything really much in the field that I wanted to go into. And even then, if I did, how much money would I make? There was no guarantee that you'd necessarily have a job when you came out. So we talked it over, and we took a trip down to Las Vegas and took a look at the motel and look at the situation, and we decided that we would accept that. So this was in about March or April of 1946. We packed up everything and moved to Las Vegas and moved into the motel. It had a pretty nice apartment as for the manager, and we lived there in Las Vegas and went into running the motel business. And it was a interesting experience. Phil was a very demanding boss, but he was gone for about 5 months of the year, so I pretty well had a free rein of running the motel on my own. And when they were there in the winter, he was very involved with other things too. He had an apartment house that he was involved in and some other things. So we worked together, I think, reasonably well for the period of time. And I worked for him running that for 3 years, and then the business was good at the motel. We were filled up almost every day. By 3 or 4 o'clock in the afternoon, all the rooms would be rented, and so it meant that the evenings there really wasn't very much to do, except you generally had to have somebody there available at the office should there be any kind of an emergency or anything. And Jeannie didn't object to sitting there sometimes answering calls or answering the phone or talking to people if they came in, if they locked themselves out of the room or something like that. So I started working for a company that made sterling silver flatware, knives and forks and sets of silver. And there had been a man come in and stay at the motel who represented that company, and he came in looking for people to work for him as to sell for that company. And in the process of him looking for somebody to sell, why, we got to visiting, and pretty soon he said, well, why don't you go to work? He says, I like your approach better than the ones I've been interviewing. And so I took over on selling that, and it was strictly a hard kind of selling. It was a door-to-door. You had to knock on doors, or you had to call and make appointments. You had to find your customers, and which is probably as hard a selling as there is to do. But it was interesting. This silver setting sold for $25 for a place setting, and that would be the way you would try to start the people buying. You wouldn't try to sell them a whole set at one time. You would try to sell them one place setting for $25. And then, of course, the women always would want to either build it up to a four place setting or a six or an eight or a 12. And each time they would make a jump in the number of place settings, there was an incentive program where you could offer them an extra teaspoon or a soup spoon or a salad knife or something as a specialty piece, and then that would get them to buying the other special pieces as well. And I did pretty good on that. I got to where I had worked out a system where I would, if I would sell someone a set, then I would offer them a bonus if they got me customers where I would sell more sets. And so many times those women, we would set up an appointment and they would invite two or three of their friends over. And so when I would make my sales approach to them, I would be selling two or three people at the same time instead of having to go out and sell them one at a time. And an interesting thing happened at one of the evenings like that. The person who had invited these friends to come and see about the silver, two of the couples that were invited were both jewelers. One of them was Vern Christensen, who his father owned a jewelry store. Vern worked for him. Vern was a watchmaker working for his dad. And the jeweler who worked for him was named Jack Huntington, and he and his wife were there. And so I got a kick out of it. Here I am selling silverware to guys who work for a jewelry store that sold silverware. And so I figured, well, there's not much chance of selling them anything, but there were other couples there. So I went ahead and made the whole approach and the sales pitch, and we had a good evening. And we had known both these couples outside of this selling experience because they were both members of the church. So we had known them at church and gotten to be pretty good friends. But shortly after that evening of that I tried to sell them all on buying silverware, Vern called and asked if we could meet together for a few minutes, and I said sure. So he said he had an idea, and I said, what's that? And he said, well, why don't you and I open up a jewelry store together? I'll handle the repair department and you handle the sales. He was impressed with the fact that I almost sold him. In fact, his wife almost insisted that they buy some silver that night, the sales approach, and he got a kick out of that because they had silverware for sale in their store. But he thought that I had that ability to sell and that he had the ability to run a repair department, that we could team up. So I said, well, that sounds good to me. Well, in the meantime, just about that same time, Phil had sold his motel in West Yellowstone. So he no longer was going, he didn't go up there that summer. Well, that left him, that was a source of income now that he didn't have, and he had all this time on his hands. And he decided that he would come back in and run the motel in Las Vegas himself. He just didn't feel that he could afford to hire a manager anymore when he had so much time on his hand and he had lost the income from West Yellowstone. So that was fine. It didn't bother me that much. The motel business was all right, but it's a 24-hour-a-day business in a lot of ways. You know, the people would lock themselves out of the rooms in the night, and there would be problems in the night. So you never really hardly ever got a full night's sleep. You always got disturbed some way. Plus, by now, Marty had been born, so we had two little children, and that apartment wasn't very big. And then Steve came along, and Steve wasn't born until we moved to Riverside. I'm jumping ahead, I think. But Marty was born there, and so with the two little boys, well, that made it kind of hard. And so I went back. There was an Air Force base just outside of Las Vegas called Nellis Air Force Base. It's still there. So I went out to Nellis. And I had a civil service appointment from when I had been at Hill and had qualifications. So I went out and they hired me immediately, and I went to work at Nellis. And then I was still selling the jewelry. I had plenty of time, and then even had more time on my own in the evenings and was selling more silver. And the fact that I had more time, then I contacted a jewelry store in Salt Lake City. It was Anderson's Jewelers. And asked if they put outside salesmen, and they said, well, they really didn't have much, but they wouldn't object doing that. So we worked out where I had just a little sample case of watches and rings and actually other jewelry items more than the silverware. So I already had built up a customer base of people that I was selling silver to, so it wasn't too difficult to go back to some of them and sell them watches and rings and bracelets and necklaces and other jewelry pieces. And so I built up a pretty good business doing that, and then was working at the air base during the day and working on aircraft. And then when that meant we didn't have a place to live because of moving out of the motel, so I bought a little house out in Paradise Valley, which was about 4 miles from the 4 to 5 miles from the center of town, kind of out in the desert. And it was a little ranch style house with a porch across the front, and it was on 2.5 acres of ground, and it was really a pretty nice little setup. And we moved out there and lived in that house, and then I worked, like I say, the base. And in the meantime also, a couple of ventures that Phil and I had gotten into while I was working for him at the motel. We bought a little apartment house together, and it was a 4-unit apartment. And then I went to work on some of the spare time and with another man, and we built another apartment on it. So it was a 5-apartment unit. And then we bought a service station that we bought together. We just owned the land and the building and leased it out, and somebody else run it. And adjacent to it was a building that was kind of like a repair area where they do tires and engines and all that kind of stuff, and we bought that and owned the building there. So we had these rental units that Phil and I owned together they were basically just paying themselves off. They didn't generate a lot of additional income, but they were making all the payments and accumulating. We were putting all the money back into them. So we lived out on Paradise Valley Road for a year. And in the meantime, then is when Vern and I had decided that we might want to go in the jewelry business together. And so through his contact, through the jewelry store, salesmen who would come in to call on the jewelry store traveled all over the country, and they would see other stores that were for sale or available. And so they would tell Vern about them. And so we started then looking around, and we looked at two or three different stores and in different areas that came up for sale, and we didn't really like any of them especially well, and we weren't too convinced about them. And then in March of 1950, one of the salesmen told us about a store that was coming up for sale in Riverside, California. And we didn't know where Riverside, California was, but we thought, well, we ought to go down and take a look at it anyway and see, because the store situation sounded pretty good. So the four of us, Jeannie and I and Vernon, his wife Doris, the four of us went down first of March and took a look at this store, and it looked pretty good. And we began to work out some terms with the guy that was selling out. He was closing out the store, getting out of the jewelry business, and he had been in there in quite a while, and as well as having the jewelry store, he also taught jewelry making at the school, and so he had quite a background in it. And so we worked out terms with him, and it sounded pretty good, so we went back to Las Vegas, and in 30 days we sold our home. I sold out the business ventures that I was in. I sold with Phil. I sold actually to him because he wanted them, and so he just bought me out of them. And we packed everything up, and in April of 1950 we moved when we heard about the store in March, and we went down in April and looked at the store, and it was beautiful. And besides the store looking good, it was in April in Riverside, California. There's lots of orange trees, the big orange groves in that area, and the orange blossoms were in bloom that type of year, and it smells sweet. And we stayed in a motel that we just right outside the motel were orange trees, with the oranges were just right for eating, and we picked oranges off the tree, and we thought we had gone from that desert at Las Vegas into heaven. We thought we were in paradise, and we really enjoyed it and thought it was a beautiful place, which it is. And so then we went and sold everything from that date, and so it was the middle of May, actually. We opened up the 13th of May and opened the business ourselves then, and we're now into Riverside, California, with a whole change of our lives. And I'll give you a couple little interesting points about Las Vegas before we finish that change. The church in Las Vegas was very small. It was a very similar situation to the way it had been in Boise. When we went to Boise, there was one ward, and a very small ward that I described, and we helped build the second ward. And the stake was incorporated not only the town of Boise, but all the adjacent towns around it. Well, when we went to Las Vegas, there was one ward in Las Vegas, and we helped build the second ward. And the stake incorporated all the towns as far north as Bunkerville and Littlefield and Mesquite, and south as far as Kingman, Arizona, and east and west over into Pahrump. And so it was like Kingman was 110 miles south of Las Vegas, so you can figure how big the stake area was. When we would go to visit one of those wards, it was a 220 mile round trip to go out and visit a ward. So the Moapa stake was a big area. And the church was growing, however, and as I say, soon after we got there, they started and we helped build a second ward, and that began to grow. And the bishop in our ward at that time was Bishop Tom Adams, and was a great guy, and Jeannie and I became involved and started attending there, and got to meeting, and there were lots of young couples our age, or at least quite a few, And so they were all starting their families, and it was the same situation with us. And so we had become very well acquainted with quite a few different people in Las Vegas that we enjoyed their friendship, and we did things together, and we had some good times. I worked mostly with young men. I was a scout master for a while. I was an explorer leader for a while. I was a mutual president for a while. I taught Sunday school. I was a Sunday school superintendent. I had, you know, various positions in, and Jeannie worked in the primary and a lot, and in the Relief Society. And so we were involved in the church, our church activity there in Las Vegas. About the time, or shortly after the time we left there, Phil became the bishop of the ward in one of the wards. But by then it was up to, he was the bishop, I think, of the sixth ward, so you can tell how much it had grown. And now today, I think there's 87 wards and 12 or 14 stakes right in Las Vegas, because the town has grown to 1.5 million people since we were there. But it was an interesting experience in Las Vegas. It was the one thing Jeannie didn't like about it was the desert and the heat, and the fact that you were kind of like an island, because in order to go anywhere or to do anything, you had all this desert to drive through before you would get to anything. And so it wasn't like you could go just for an hour to somewhere and there was anything particularly interesting, except the lake was there. Lake Mead was real nice, and that was close. And Boulder Dam, which was interesting to see, but after you've seen it a couple of times, it isn't that interesting. But I did spend quite a lot of time out on the lake. I enjoyed fishing and exploring a lot of the areas on Lake Mead, and so I did go out there a lot. And Phil and I bought a little 11-foot wooden hull boat with a 10-horsepower motor on it, and I would take that out and do some fishing. And then I also took it down on the Colorado River below Las Vegas, which was very beautiful down in there. And that was the, you know, freshwater river fishing, and there were beautiful trout in the river, and I enjoyed that. And so I kept that little boat down there and went fishing there quite often down on the river. And it was only about 45 minutes or something to run down there to go fishing. And one time a good friend of mine that I had known in Ogden when I was in high school, his name was Willis Oberon. His family and Jeannie's family had been very close friends through the years. And Bill was living down in North Hollywood. He worked for NBC down there in the radio part of their business. And in fact, he was the producer when they started into television. He was the producer on the show that Groucho Marx had, Do You Bet Your Life? And so he worked in that area, and when they would head for home to visit up in Ogden, why, Las Vegas was a pretty natural stop, so they would stop and visit. So the one day when they had stopped, Bill and Nan had stopped to visit with us, and I said, well, would you like to go down and see what the river looks like? And so we went down, and we crawled aboard. We had a little bigger boat by then, and we crawled aboard the boat, and the four of us, and I took them for a ride up the river. And on the way coming back down, I said, well, let's just pick up a couple of trout for dinner. And you know, that's bragging like crazy to figure you can just stop and pick up trout. But I had some fishing gear aboard the boat, so we pulled into a cove that I was fairly familiar with, and I threw out, and sure enough, in 15 or 20 minutes, I caught two real nice big trout. And so I said, well, that's enough for us, for the four of us, for dinner. And I just made it sound like that was an everyday occurrence, that you could pick them up that easy. And so I think to this day, if you ever asked Bill how the fishing was on the Colorado River, he'd say, well, you just go pick up whatever you want. And we took those on home and cooked them for dinner. And And so the Lake Mead was good for bass, and we used to go out there and fish a lot, and that was great and beautiful water out there. And we did some water skiing out there as well. And then we fished the Colorado River. And then we just a little north of Las Vegas was the lake, was the Mount Charleston area, which was a mountain and get snow and had a ski resort up there. Well, I had to try my hand at skiing, so I went up there and went snow skiing a few times, and it was kind of fun because it was such a change of from being in the desert there at Las Vegas. You didn't realize that you could be up in the snow in an hour and a half. You could be in a total different situation. It was very pretty up in there, you know, in the pines and beautiful area. And so those were the recreation things, and our church was our involvement and our work, and that was about our life in Las Vegas. But the change to Riverside was just dramatic because it was a beautiful area, like I say, just big orange groves. It was a bedroom type town. It was a very small town. It was about 30,000, and a very clean, pretty town. And the interesting thing when we moved there was there was one ward, and it was a small ward, and we helped build the second, and the stake was big. The stake, actually the center of the stake wasn't even in Riverside. We were just part of the stake. But the stake took in Riverside. It took in a little town south of there, 30 miles away, Hemet, and another town over a different direction, Elsinore, and it took in, going the other way, it took in San Bernardino, it took in Palm Springs, it took in Bakersfield, it took in Pomona, Ontario, it took in all the towns within a 100-mile radius of the center of the stake, which was, it was a San Bernardino stake, actually, and the president of the stake lived over in Pomona, and so it was an interesting experience to again be in an area where it was like seeing the starting of the church, because it was just one very small ward when we moved there. It was a very little building. It was very similar to the little white church that was in Boise that we had started out in, and we saw quite a growth there. Then now there's in the Riverside area, there are 12 stakes in that area. So it's the growth has really come over the years to be quite tremendous. We lived in a motel when we first got there to Riverside because we didn't know where or have a place to live. So we just lived in a motel till we decided where we wanted to live. And we found a little tract of homes that had just been built that were pretty nice, and so we bought a house in out on Culver Street, which wasn't very far out from the town area. Our jewelry store was right on the main street of town, across the street from the courthouse. It was already established, and that was the store that we purchased. This little house wasn't very big. It had two bedrooms and then a den, and then, you know, a kitchen, living room, and so on, and bath, and a little garage. And we paid $10,800 for it. We paid $800 down and took a mortgage out for the $10,000, and that was worked out pretty nice as a little house for us to live in. We operated the jewelry store where we were for about a year or so, and starting in any business, even though it was an established business, still it isn't any guarantee that the people are going to come and trade with you just because they had traded with the store the way it was before. And for two families to all of a sudden try to start drawing an income and a living out of it, it made it pretty tight. So we decided that we would have to find another source of income on top of the what we hopefully were going to make out of the jewelry store. So Vern and I both went and applied for a job with the railroad. The railroad ran out of Riverside and from there to Indio and back on a was one of the runs, and so we applied and we both got hired as brakemen on the railroad, and I worked for about 2 weeks, I think it was, with it, and one of the payments came in from Las Vegas from sale of the property, and I didn't really particularly care about working on the railroad. It meant you had to work all night and then work all day in the store. So this payment came in from Las Vegas, so we used that to live on, and I quit the railroad. And then I started looking for other ways to earn some money at the store, and I went out, and there's an Air Force base right by, adjacent to Riverside, called March Air Force Base. And I went out and talked to the people that, who ran the post exchange, which is the store, the business part of the operation, and ask them what they were doing and if they had a repair department for watches and jewelry out there. And they said, well, yes, they did, but and I asked about how it worked, and they said, well, you bid for it.